This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhawk.
Welcome, listeners, to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Amy Nelson, and joined with me is the wonderful Justin Ozer. Justin, how are you doing today?
Doing great. This is a great episode. We have a nice little announcement and a great topic, so it's very, very exciting.
We do. So as this announcement goes, like, Justin, we've had some great guests on, right? The past two weeks since Richard left us. But it's time to get someone with us each and every week. He can be constant. And we are here so very excited to welcome Joe Keegan to Earl Grey. Joe, welcome.
Amy, thank you for describing me as a constant. It's lovely. It's not offensive in the slightest. So glad to be here. I'm so excited. Kind of terrifying. It feels like I've never podcasted before. So I'm a co-host now, so it's exciting.
Yeah, welcome, Joe. It's very exciting. We've loved all the things you brought and the different topics, and just thought it would be natural to invite you on as a co-host.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you.
Yes. Oh, I'm just so excited. All right. And Justin and Joe, you guys have met
no,
in person?
No.
No. No.
I think we've...
Oh, not last year?
It turned out that we didn't last year, right?
But no, we didn't, no. And you missed the previous STLV, 2017.
No, I was there in 2017 also.
Okay.
Yeah, but see, you pretended to not know me 2 years ago, Joe.
Amy's not going to let go of that.
I know.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, this year,
all three of us will be together, right?
I know, Earl Grey, yay.
I'm going to start ignoring Amy Nelson at STLV now. Who's this, Amy Nelson?
You are not.
Who's Amy Nelson? Who is she? I don't really...
You know I podcast, don't you know?
The name...
Now who's going to be saying that?
The name rings a bell, but I can't put a face to the name. It's strange. I know Justin. Justin's that famous podcaster guy, isn't he, on the Trek FM network? Yeah. I know Justin Ozer, yeah.
That's Justin.
Yeah.
Well, anyways. Okay, well, listeners, let's get to some Babel Conference feedback, and let's talk about Commander Riker's option to be a captain. Let's save it that way. And that was Earl Grey 278. So, Justin, why don't you start us off?
Well, he was a captain in Nemesis, so you could call him Captain
Riker.
That's
true.
Well, Tim Robertson says, great podcast, guys. It might be interesting if at STLV someone could ask Jonathan Frakes, what does he see as Riker's motivation to remain on the Enterprise? I doubt you would get a serious response, but who knows? Well, thanks for the comment, Tim. Glad you enjoyed the episode. Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Frakes might not give a serious response to it, but I do like to ask questions at STLV, so I might ask yours. And I hope you're there in the audience to hear it.
All right, Joe.
Rhea Papagiorgio says, Riker stayed back so he could direct. Duh.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I had to put a comment in the Babel Conference like, that's the best reason that's been given so far. He had to direct, right? Of course. He couldn't leave in season two. He had to direct in season three.
Yeah.
How many episodes did he direct? Do we know, roughly?
Here we go. Star Trek directorial credits. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in TNG, so more than I thought. 3 in DS9, and 3 in Voyager, of course, 2 TNG movies as well. So he's directed a lot of Star Trek. Actually, it's 3 episodes of Discovery, and at least 2 of Picard. So.
Oh, that's right, 3. Yeah, because we had 1 and then 2.
Justin, I'm disappointed that these are details that you don't know off the top of your head. Like an encyclopedic knowledge.
That's what Memory Alpha is for, so that the rest of my brain can hold other Star Trek stuff. If I can look it up, you know, why should I clutter my brain with it?
Yeah.
Could I say something about Rhea Papagiorgio?
Yes, please. Yes.
She likes the way I say her name.
She likes the way I say it, too, just because you have your Scottish accent.
What was that, Amy? That was hugely offensive to me and my people.
Rhea, you'll have to let us know which one you like better. No, I'm sure she likes them equally.
I say her name much more frequently on postcards, I'm just saying.
Okay, I've said it
fewer times. We're off to a great start so far with Joe as co-host.
Yeah. I know, my goodness.
But
well, hey, let's get back to our feedback. Because Michelle Huber says, first off, I just want to say that I'm a maintenance worker and janitor, so I clean toilets, 15 of them, and everything else at a city recreation center while listening all the time. I usually save the new episodes of Earl Grey to listen at work because I prefer listening to new episodes of multiple Marvel and Star Trek podcasts at work. Also, I've always had the headcanon that Riker stayed on the Enterprise D because he's found the father figure that he wants and needs in the form of the captain. And I realize how that sounds, but it makes sense to me. Forgetting the professionalism of his relationship with Captain Picard, he really is like a son to him and is treated like one on a very subtle and nuanced level. I feel like Riker had been subconsciously trying to fill the void in his life where his father would be. After the incident with Captain Pressman, it couldn't be Pressman anymore, so he then eventually found what he was looking for with Jean-Luc Picard. That's how I see it anyways. Well, Michelle, that's absolutely a brilliant idea. I didn't even think about it, but it does make sense with what we know with his relationship with his own father. Maybe he did find it with Pressman and found it with Picard.
His father was Kyle Riker, played by Mitchell Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Michelle, I mean, I think that's a great way to look at it. I accept that headcanon, and thank you for letting us know how you listen to Earl Grey. I mean, I think people listen to it doing all kinds of stuff, and very cool that while you're doing your maintenance and janitorial job that you're listening to us talk about Star Trek. I think that's very cool. Well, Karen Chupless says, simple, he'd have to give up away missions. As XO, he gets to command some, go on away missions, still be able to have crew relationships and not be isolated, still be considered in the same echelon. A captaincy would toss all that away. I wouldn't go for that either. It's kind of the best of both worlds. So thanks, Karen. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Like in the 24th century, as the first officer, you're going on the away missions, having the good time. And I put a comment in the Babel conference like, well, if it was in the 23rd century where the captain gets to go on all the away missions, then maybe he would have taken it more readily. But it's a great point. I mean, I think there's a lot to being first officer on the Enterprise D that recommends it, right?
Well, it was funny also on the Babel conference. It's like, well, it's not like going up to captain increases your salary.
Right. Yeah. But as Picard would say, there's nothing like holding the reins, you know, but whatever that means.
Yeah. I can kind of relate to that. Not that I'm promoted in any way whatsoever. I'm really happy just being a normal unpromoted classroom teacher because I see it. I get to do all the fun stuff like teach kids and do all the fun experiments. And if I go for promotion, then I have to manage people and do paperwork.
You adults.
Do adult stuff.
Yeah. It's like going from captain to admiral. You have to probably sit behind a desk.
Yeah,
just be right?
A paper pusher, yeah. Sounds unfun.
Nice.
All right, well, let's get to today's discussion. I am very, very excited. I have never looked at blueprints ever before. And so this is going to be a very, I think, interesting discussion. And Joe, this was your idea. So why don't you tell the listeners, like, what were you thinking when you wanted to discuss the blueprints of the Enterprise D?
I had no clue when you guys were looking for ideas, what we would or could talk about, and I've not listened to every episode of Earl Grey, so I wasn't sure what had been covered before, and I thought I'd try to go a bit, kind of think outside the box and do something that we probably haven't done before. And that's when it occurred to me, oh, I've got a copy of the Blueprints. Let's do that. I had a discussion of them. And it goes back to, I think, possibly the mid-90s when I was a teenager, when I had a couple of years into my rediscovery of Star Trek. And I was watching Next Generation. And they were producing a lot of kind of books and the Star Trek Next Generation technical manual and the Blueprints. And I was, as a kind of sciencey, nerdy, geeky kid, I was really fascinated by all the kind of the minutiae of how things worked. And the Enterprise D is just one of the most beautiful starships that you could ever possibly imagine. So I wanted to know everything about it. And so I got the Blueprints, and totally fascinating.
Yeah. And Justin, have you, I think, did you have to order them? Because I had to order them because I didn't have a copy. So what did you think?
Yeah, I did have to order them. So, I mean, as I've said before, I've been a big Star Trek fan more recently, like in the last 10 years. So I wasn't aware of all this stuff that was coming out. And most of the stuff that I have that are books are, you know, the fiction, the novels. I have a few nonfiction things. Well, yes, this isn't nonfiction though, is it? But anyway, so the Blueprints, yeah, I thought that was interesting. I had to order it and I didn't know what to expect. And they put a lot into this. So there's a little booklet that we'll talk about that has some interviews and some perspectives on it. But the main thing is these poster-sized blueprints. There's like 13 of them and they cover all the decks and they have like lots of different details. And I just kind of went about studying them, like looking at each deck and seeing if there's, you know, interesting stuff in there. And it was really interesting because we'll probably talk about this. It makes it feel a little more real because in the show, you just see little bits of the ship, but you're not seeing all of it by any stretch. But with this, you're getting to like see the different decks and kind of go through it layer by layer. So it was really cool. Yeah.
It was interesting as well. You only see the bits of the ship that it was obviously affordable to do with their production budget. Because there's some, like the main shuttle bay is mammoth, is a gigantic, huge area on deck four. But the one we see on the TV episodes is on deck five, which is a lot smaller.
Yeah. You never see the inside of the main shuttle bay. You just see the outside and cause and effect when they decompress it, but you never see the inside, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Because there's like something like 50 shuttles docked and berths around outside walls, which I wish we'd got to see that at some point. Mm-hmm.
So, like you said, Justin, there were these 13 posters and they really were just beautiful. Just real quick, there was the dorsal surface plan, so from the top, and then a separate one was screen two, was from the bottom, the ventral surface plan view. The third poster had your fore elevation and your aft elevation and the standard elevation. And I think that third poster is my favorite because there's three different ship views on it. For the fourth poster, they have the starboard cutaway view with internal deck plans, and that gives you deck one, the lower deck, and deck two. And then all of these, I noticed, and it even said on the blueprint that it's the XZ plane, so it's bird's eye view. The fifth one was decks three, four, and five. Screen six was deck six and seven. Screen 7 was deck 8 and 9, and then screen 8 was decks 10 and 11.
Amy, can I ask? I did see that, like the X, we see Z over here, like X, Y, Z. And I thought, okay, I couldn't, with the amount, a small amount of time that I thought about it, I couldn't figure out which one. So you're saying XZ is the,
like that overhead bird's so eye.
X is in the forward direction of the ship and Z is kind of horizontally across the ship.
So X is your, yeah, horizontal
math lesson.
And then your Z is the what that gives you your third dimension. So it would be, if you're thinking about a cube, it'd be your length and then your height.
Oh, so Z so is no your height, width. Like north. Okay, I get that. But in terms of these blueprints, does that conform to like our normal definition of XYZ?
Yes, so
Z is like from deck one down to deck 40, whatever it is.
Yeah, so okay. You're looking at the plane XZ plane instead of the XY plane. It's very wonderfully mathematical.
I have to spend a few minutes thinking about it so I can internalize it and fully understand.
So it's not until the 10th poster where we get just all the major decks and it starts getting smaller into the neck. But the 10th poster has decks 15 to 25. The 11th has decks 26 to 33. The 12th poster has decks 34 to 38. And then the 13th poster has decks 39 to 42. And then it has the symbol key, and it has all the room spaces and all the hardware, and they have each little room, and then it's just it was brilliantly done.
It's a great idea for an episode as well. I was like, who came up with that?
So I wanted to ask, like, what do you think is the appeal of being able to study these blueprints? I mean, particularly of this giant vessel like the Enterprise. Joe?
Is it not like that wanting to explore what you see on TV and imagine yourself in an episode? And if you've got all the details and the layouts and you can relate, oh, there's the bridge and there's 10 forward. So how would I get there? What corridors would I take? I know it's like two-dimensional planes we're seeing, like cross-sectional planes. But I think it helps you kind of visualise, you know, where everybody's crew quarters are and where is main engineering in terms of the bridge. I think the kind of current, like present day extension of the blueprints is kind of a VR walk around of kind of something like a spaceship, or if you've ever been on like a starbase in Star Trek Online and you get to wander around, it's kind of like that. So it's putting yourself in an episode and using your imagination to see what it would be like.
Yeah, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's impossible, even in 176 episodes, to explore everywhere in the ship. They had the budget limitations and all of that. So it's being able to kind of explore and see, like you're taking a tour of the ship. But it's also kind of some revelations. Like, I made some notes about some things I saw in some of the blueprints. Like, Deck 12 has the sick bay. And sick bay is enormous. It seems like it takes up about a quarter of the deck. And on the show, you basically just see like the main sick bay and Crusher's office. Maybe there's another room. But I counted like 12 different rooms that are sick bay, which makes sense on like on a ship of 1,000 people. But it seems so small when you actually see it on the show. And then there are other things. I have to mention it because it was like my favorite thing that I saw here. As listeners might know, in yesterday's Enterprise, there's a little mention like over the intercom about Cetacean Ops. And we've talked about it in various Trek FM shows over the years, but basically like these kind of dolphin officers that do things. And they actually put that in the blueprints on, I think it was deck 13 and 14. And there's, I don't know, like 15 different rooms of cetaceans. Who knows like how they work or what they do, but it's just those things where there was like this tiny little mention that the first time I watched The Next Generation, I completely missed that until I heard a Trek FM podcast. And I'm like, Cetacean Ops, what is that? But it's become one of my favorite things, and to actually see it on the blueprint, and they show like the different rooms with the tanks, and you can see like the little outlines of these dolphin creatures. That's just awesome. Just like these things that you would never see, and now you're visualizing like, wow, that would be amazing just to see. I mean, there was tons of details. I made like a lot of notes. I won't be able to talk about all of them, but those are two things that stood out, like the scale and some of the things that you'd never get to see on the show is really cool to see.
But what are the cetacean creatures? I want to know, are they like a sentient aquatic species that serve?
I think that's the idea.
Starfleet, or is it just like having what was the Sequest DSV dolphin? Mind that TV show Sequest, the submarine.
I saw it many years ago.
Darwin the dolphin, a dolphin that could speak.
Yeah, I think the idea is that they are doing like work. Because it's cetacean ops. It's not like, oh, let's visit these dolphin-like creatures. I think they are supposed to be sentient cetaceans. And you have never seen that in, I should say, in the 21st century at least. But like in the novels, you do get some of those like cetacean officers. And there's one particular Dark Mirror, which is about the mirror universe, where you do get to see this cetacean officer who's apparently like a wizard at navigation. I don't know how that would play into the Enterprise D, but yeah,
I'd heard that before, that the cetacean ops area was used for some kind of stellar navigation. It's apparently, I don't know, dolphins, whales are good at that kind of thing.
See, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. And they actually, on the blueprints, like you said, there's these little outlines of dolphins or fish looking creatures. And there's a cetacean navigation lab. The lifeboats for the cetaceans.
Yeah, I love that too, that they actually had the lifeboats, because I hadn't even thought about that. But yeah, you need different lifeboats for them.
And they're ops. And so, yeah, and it covers multiple decks. So these are very large tanks. And it made me think of the Zindi in the Enterprise season 3.
Yes, the aquatics, yeah.
And it made me also think of Discovery with the tardigrade and like how they were navigating Discovery. And I was like, this navigation lab, maybe that's helping the Enterprise D to navigate. So those were my tie-ins when I saw that. But I have a huge question mark next to my notes. Like, what in the heck is that?
Come on, let's see these cetacean officers in the Picard series, right? I would love that so much.
I don't see why there's any reason why we shouldn't see all the cool things from a Galaxy class starship that we couldn't see in TNG. Because there has to be some Galaxy class starships flying around still in the Picard series. About the cetacean docks, I like the fact there was a wet dry lock. So you could go from the corridor, air breathing, put on your scuba gear, and you could go and swim around with the fishies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they thought of a lot of details like that. Like, it was not only putting the rooms, but like, how does somebody who has to go from a dry area to a wet area deal with that? And there was like all kinds of things where there are different like support areas, or they're thinking about like how many crew quarters to put in. Because that's another thing that struck me. Like, yeah, there's 1,000 people. There's got to be a lot of crew quarters, but we only see like a couple of corridors really in the series. But there were like many decks with crew quarters. It seemed like most of them had some kind of crew accommodations of some sort, which is great. And they managed to like fit all this stuff in, and you're looking at it and you're like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. I mean, I think they thought about it a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as I was thinking about like, what is the appeal to studying these blueprints? Cause like I said, I'd never studied blueprints before, but it was so interesting. And I found the dichotomy between learning more, but then yet that opened up my imagination. So it's like, the more specific it was, the more it sparked my imagination. And it was just like, oh, well, what if this? And my brain was just doing a whole bunch of these what ifs. And I thought, man, it's interesting that I'm seeing more detail to, you know, formalize like where the quarters are in relation to each other. Just so you know, Deanna's is right next to Riker's. And
I absolutely noticed that.
Yes. Got to get my Deanna reference in there before someone else.
I think they're near each other so that they can, you know, better communicate as Imzadi if they want to just send some thoughts or something.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
On deck eight.
That was the other thing. Like, they're on deck eight, and meanwhile, I think it's like Worf and Data are like up on deck two.
And LaForge. Yeah. LaForge is on deck two as well.
And LaForge is on deck two.
Which
like,
didn't make sense to me.
Why aren't all the senior officers like closer to the bridge? I don't know.
Or why wouldn't LaForge be close to main engineering?
Because that's where all the engineering crews are.
But he's,
yeah, but he's the chief engineer by this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting that some of the decisions that they made, and then Picard's was, I forget where it was.
Right in the front. I put a question mark. It's like right above 10 forward. So his is like right front center. Is like, whew, that's sort of dangerous to be so right there.
I know.
He should have a spiral staircase from his quarters on deck 8 down directly into 10 forward. So he could just kind of come down with his like, kind of silk dressing gown on and kind of order a drink. What I also liked as well about 10 forward, that there are various locations around the ship of like crew lounges.
Right. I noticed that too, which makes sense. It seemed like there were a lot of decks that had crew lounges, which would make sense if you didn't want to make your way all the way up to 10 forward or just like interact with people on your deck or whatever. It makes sense.
Yeah, I did notice all the different types of lounges, but I found this interesting that's a little different from ships that we've seen previously, like in Enterprise, Discovery, and the original series. Like, there's no main mess hall. Like, everyone's, I feel like, is either eating in their quarters, but there's not like a main cafeteria. Mm. You know, lounges, there's a lot of them, but it seems to be like more just hanging out, you know, maybe playing chess, getting a drink, but it's not really per se a mess hall. And I found that one of the differences between like previous starships and what we see on the Enterprise D. I think it sort of leads into that the ship is being more comfortable, and it has been called the Hyatt Regency in space, is what the what it was called back then. I guess we call it Hilton in the Stars or something like that. But the ship was designed to be more comfortable, and Gene specifically wanted families on the ship, and that you are going to be living here, so that it needed to be more comfortable. So what aspects of looking through the blueprints did you find that's going to make this ship more comfortable, actually a living place and not just a workplace?
It looked like it was all carpeted. Like the addition of
carpets. And
that
was specific from Gene.
Yeah.
I mean, you see that on the show, but there's nothing you can tell that from the blueprints, right?
Oh, no, not at all. From the blueprints, what makes it look more comfortable? I don't think you can tell.
I think, you know, part of it is all those crew lounges, but then there was also like a bunch of gyms. There's like multiple holodecks. I mean, and you see some of that on the show, but there's like all of these, this space that's set aside kind of for recreation, and the bridge is pretty big and all of that. But like one of the things that struck me also was that this is a ship that requires a lot of engineering support. So there are like many, many decks that are supporting engineering. So it's not like the whole thing is all about luxury, like the you know, secondary hull and the neck and a lot of all of that seems to support engineering. And it's like this big saucer section is, I mean, it's the bridge as well, but it's, and science labs and things like that. But there is like a lot of space for crew quarters and lounges and all kinds of things. So it seems like there's two different things. Like the saucer section, I think, does have kind of this luxury and being comfortable and providing things for families. But then as you get down toward the engineering section, it's more like the a lot more of the functional stuff of the ship.
That kind of makes sense, doesn't it, though? If you've got the thing that moves the ship around, the secondary hull, then you want all the engineering bits and complicated mechanisms
and,
in there.
And if that separates out into the battle bridge, like you want it to be, you know, this lean, efficient thing and not have like all this luxury that flies off in the saucer section, right?
Yeah, and that's, you know, you do see the separation. Well, they have the, you know, where the saucer separates, and they show that on the blueprints and stuff. But I mean, to your point, there I counted 13 different types of quarters.
Yeah, it was
a
lot.
And I was like, dang, you know, it's like choosing a house floor plan, you know, and deciding which type or, you know, based on your rank. So the design of just your living quarters is, you know, very, I think, different than what we saw in previous starships.
Well, it's also an interesting choice to have so many different kinds of quarters. Because this is supposed to be like a pretty like egalitarian society, but it seems like there is like this kind of stratification or hierarchy in quarters based on your rank, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's Yeah, to small quarters. Well, and part of it, you know, it may not be based on your rank, but like your family size.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, that would make more sense. But even then, if you look like Crusher and Riker and Troy all have the same size quarters, and then there's a different shape for Worf and LaForge, then Data gets his little
the
box.
Smallest.
And yeah. Notice Data has no bed in his quarters.
But yeah, I suppose that's just he doesn't need it, but
right.
But you do see him in bed in the series. He has a bed.
Yeah, when he's dreaming, he's working on his
I know, but why wouldn't that show in the blueprints?
Yeah. Because that was just temporary.
Oh, okay. Just, you know, for his sleeping, dreaming phase, he had a bed rolled in and then had it rolled out later.
You would think also that bridge officers and the chief and engineer would get quarters with windows in them. Because Worf and LaForge don't. Neither does Data. I think you would want, if you'd like having a window, like if you go on a cruise and the more expensive cabins are on the outside with window views or a balcony, and then the cheap ones are in, like in the inside of the ship, which is like in a symbol of status, isn't it?
Well, it seems like it's because they're on deck two, and that's kind of like embedded inside, so you wouldn't have the ability to have windows there. Well, although the second deck should go out all the way. I don't know.
Yeah.
2360-something, they should be able to put windows in somewhere.
Well, and did you also notice that there is an alternate captain's quarter?
Yes.
I noticed that. Like, what does that mean? Was that near the captain's yacht?
Yes, it's on deck 20. Captain's yacht's on deck 16.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's, you know, in case of separation.
Yes, and he stays with the Star Drive section. Yeah.
Right. Or, that's what I was thinking.
Or in the event of, like, you ram the ship into another big evil ship, like in Nemesis, then Picard's quarters would have been destroyed.
Would have been destroyed, yeah.
Yes, so he'd have to go and live in his other, his holiday home.
Right.
It's a good point.
Exactly, yeah. When you ram into things, your quarters are going to get destroyed.
I have to say, it is really cool that they show the captain's yacht, because we see that on the Enterprise E in the movies, but we never see it in the D. It's nice to confirm that it's there. It's just too bad we never saw it.
I think they designed the Enterprise E's captain's yacht to look cool, because they knew we were going to see it, and I don't think the Enterprise D's captain's yacht looks very good. I think.
But why is there a captain's yacht?
In case they. Captain wants to go sailing.
he takes his pleasure cruise to Risa on his captain's yacht.
Yeah.
Well, or in case he has to, you know, travel to do some diplomatic, you know, consultation or whatever.
Couldn't take
and
a
he
shuttle.
Needs to arrive, you know, in all of his diplomacy and, style. It is the flagship. So they're sending the best of the best a presentation. Yeah.
Makes sense.
But if you want the best of the best, you take the whole ship. You take the Federation's flagship.
But if you're going down into the atmosphere.
What? Yeah, okay. But what if there's a distress call over here and there needs to be a diplomatic mission over there?
Which happens.
It happens.
So one other thing I noticed that I was thinking about, like this Enterprise D, that I don't think that I ever knew, but there is a lot of extra space that's used for future expansion. So
that's
the
true.
Ship has room to grow. There were multiple decks where they could have, built in more crew quarters, you know, just these open spaces. I thought that was pretty awesome to think about.
You're right. I hadn't thought about it too much, but I noticed that there are places for future expansion. But it makes sense. It's kind of like, you know, if a company has an office building, they want to make sure as they grow, they have enough space. So they have like enough to accommodate them up to a certain point, and so there's empty space for a little bit. Enterprise D's maybe the same. Maybe they can take on more crew. They want to build more science labs, more holodecks. Who knows? I mean, how do they make these decisions for like what goes in the future expansion of the ship?
Yeah, based on the need that comes. You know, I mean, it is a small city, and so as families get larger, you may need, you know, larger family quarters
Maybe like in Remember Me, eventually it'll just be, you know, Beverly and Jean-Luc roaming the galaxy, and they need all that other space for, you know, passengers and diplomatic stuff, right?
A giant family that they have. I get the idea from looking at the blueprints that it seems kind of modular, and you could change things out if you don't like the arrangement, and you get the impression that maybe different galaxy class starships have different internal layouts, possibly.
You think they could move around certain rooms?
I don't see why not. Or you just maybe not move it, but beam it elsewhere, or
beam the room?
Yeah, why not? Cargo transporter.
I don't know. I'm just thinking, I mean, we certainly haven't seen that, but...
No, we didn't see dolphins.
Yeah, but just beaming a whole room. I mean, the thing they probably couldn't move is the things that take up multiple decks, like some of the holodecks or some of the like cetacean tanks or whatever. That would require more work, but yeah.
You might have noticed also that there were some cargo hatches on the outside, which were quite ginormous.
I didn't notice that.
There's huge sections on the outer hull that basically look like they open up to allow large pieces of cargo to be. Deck 15, cargo loading doors and cargo lifts. And there's giant...
Yeah,
like,
you saw that on the ventral view.
Yes,
yeah.
And there's giant oval lifts throughout the saucer section, like on either side of the... kind of central
axis. And on the blueprints, because there were, under the hardware that it was like the...
I'm going to make some noise by opening mine up here. I knew this was going to happen.
It has to be done.
So yeah, there was the cargo transporter, then your regular transporter, and then your emergency transporter. So those were the three that were listed on the symbol chart.
Yeah. There's also cargo lifts, like cargo turbo lifts.
Yeah.
So you could put large.
And in the engineering lifts that just go in between those decks on engineering. One thing that I wanted to talk about with the lifts was those turbo lifts and the pass through corridors. Like when we got onto where the main quarters were, you could follow the turbo lifts and it was like a maze. And it's like, yeah, you could go. So it goes up and down. And, you know, through the actual deck horizontally. And I thought that was pretty cool because I always figured that the turbo lifts not only went up and down, but side to side. And I think that
they have confirmed here.
Well, you see them going side to side, don't you?
Yeah.
With the way the lights on the inside move, you see the lights kind of go.
Well, you're assuming,
No, it's the way the lights in the background go. It's going like this, and then it's going like this sometimes.
And so you can see that, and it's just sort of like this maze of you're following the turbo shifts. The turbo lifts, it was really awesome. I like
There's probably a whole roller coaster track behind it, right?
And I'm like, man, with the math of that to, you know, like your stoplights, you know, to coordinate, well, this pod has to get over here while this one's going here. And oh my gosh.
Ooh, like, that's one episode we never got was the turbo lift malfunction episode where like two crash into each other.
I noticed there was also passing places for turbo lifts. So if there were like two turbo lifts coming into the same corridor, then there was would be a wee space that one could move into so the other one could get past. That was kind of cool. It's all those little details. Yeah.
I mean, they thought of so much. Like, how long did it take them to think of all this stuff? Or I wonder, because a lot of these people that were working on it had been working on the show for a while, if they thought about it and like made some notes over the years, because it seems like they've thought of like so many things for how it would functionally work. It's really cool. Like, I almost think like whenever we get to the point of having like big starships, people should just take a look at this to see how they want to build their starship, you know, because they've already thought of some of the ideas.
Well, let's talk about the contributors that actually created this amazing book, blueprints, etc. So the main person is Rick Sternbach. And I'm not going to lie, I've had someone tell me that they could hook up an interview with him. And I just think I might have to use that contact because I'm very interested.
Yes, Amy.
Is that a yes? Okay.
I'm in.
All right. And then other people who worked on it and listeners, you may recognize some of the names: Andrew Probert, Robert Justman, Herman Zimmerman, Richard James, Dan Curry, Michael Acuda, of course, Greg Jane, Todd Gunther. And in the little pamphlet, they went through this sort of a roundtable discussion and answered different questions. And it was so interesting to hear their responses. Like, after reading, like, what did you learn about their questions and answer that stood out to you? Justin, let's start with you.
I mean, I think I already knew because of some interviews and like how what you see on the show. But I mean, they all take this stuff like very seriously. It wasn't just like, it's some show. They need some designs and some stuff and let's do it. I mean, they were just like really passionate about it. And you can tell from this roundtable, there's a lot of things they thought about, a lot of things they loved about working on the show and making these blueprints and how, like, when they were there, they wanted to make it as real as possible and to make it, you know, feel like something that you could, a world that you could dive into. So, I mean, that was the big impression that I had, that there was just like so much passion and so much love for what they were doing, which I think really comes out in the show and in the designs and all of that. But it was interesting also the process that they were going through and some little things. Like, there was a part in here where Andy Probert, who designed the Enterprise D in his original like early sketches, there were like landing feet to land the Enterprise D, and that kind of got like lost a little bit later. And I was like, oh my God, we could have seen the Enterprise D land, but it got kind of set aside. Cause I think he had done some design on the motion picture on the refit Enterprise, and that was supposed to have some little bumps for landing maybe, but just like little things like paths they could have taken. But they thought about a lot of stuff and they took it like really seriously, which I love.
So I want to jump in real quick because you were talking about that. And I have that entire section, like I wrote in my notes, I'm like, Troy didn't crash the ship, because even though the feet got left off, Sternbach asked like, well, you know, had you given the saucer its feet? And then Probert says, well, the producers would have crashed it anyways. So
that's right.
It wasn't Troy, it was the producers. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, no, but I think like it's interesting when they're making all these design decisions, there's like a lot of different ways that they can go about it. And I think for the saucer separation, even in here, it's something, well, I think it was definitely intended from the point of the original series that, you know, the saucer could separate, but you never saw it on screen. But it was only like a little later, I think, in when they were doing things on TNG, that was something where it was like, okay, let's really integrate that into the ship and we're going to do that. And there's some special consideration, so we had to do some redesign. So I thought that was interesting, like the give and take between like, oh, design this and, well, the story needs this. And there was kind of this like back and forth, which was interesting. I just love seeing the process.
Yeah. Joe, what did you know, what stood out to you from this reading?
I'm kind of in awe of these guys. Just the ability to have that artistic vision, to take it from like a thought about what you want some minor detail on your starship to look like, and to take that into like some kind of 3D model and produce it. And I don't know how their brains work to do that. I was always really fascinated by Denise and Mike Okuda. Growing up, we had a Mac in the mid till early to mid 90s, I think. And they used Macs on the production of Next Gen to do all the kind of the visuals.
I was noticing that this thing came out in 1996, and I think they did the blueprints on a Mac Quadra 800. And I think I looked it up, it was like 33 megahertz, and now computers are in gigahertz, and it was like 8 megabytes of RAM instead of gigabytes. So they were working on things that were just like hundreds or thousands of times like slower, more difficult to use, and they still made these amazing things we can appreciate now. I mean, that must have taken so much work to do. It's incredible.
Thousands of times slower these computers were, but like 5 times as expensive.
Right.
It was like the start of like the proper PC market. Yeah, I love the fact that they did all their animations on a Mac, and I used to sit at our Mac at home and think, how could I do this? I had no clue where to start or what they even used, but utterly fascinating.
I think they used Adobe Illustrator for a lot of it, as well. Okay. Yeah, but that's cool that your imagination was going like, how can I do this?
Yeah. I want to build my own spaceship, yeah.
You know, one thing that was funny, I forget which blueprint that it's on, but there was one where it showed the different areas and it was like, touch here for 9 dorsal. Do you know, I actually reached out thinking that I could touch it and find out more. And we've gotten so used to seeing things digitally, right?
Yeah.
But they just put that on there as like a fun little thing. But I was like reaching out to touch it to find out more. But of course, it doesn't exist there.
Yes.
Oh, my. Does that ever happen to you? Like sometimes there's like a little clash and you think you can do something that you can like do on your phone or that you would see now, but you can't because it's this static physical thing.
Like an image in a book and you try and like pinch to zoom in.
Right. I've done that. I'm like, oh, can I? Oh, no, I can't zoom in on this.
it's papyrus. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, these guys' dedication, incredible. I mean, what they put together, and it's something that, like, I mean, we think a lot of times for the next generation of the appeal of it, you know, there's the characters, there's the actors, but I think has been said about a lot of the other Star Trek shows, like the ship is like a character too. It's something you grow to love and you see people living in it and going through all kinds of, you know, dramatic and wonderful things in it. So it becomes something that feels real and is like this character for you. So I think that's one of the appeals of Star Trek as well. And for the next generation, and it's just great to kind of look back at this. It is interesting. They did this, you know, after generations when they're like, well, not going to use the Enterprise D anymore. We might as well put out some blueprints on it. But, it's just great to look at this. I enjoyed it so much this week, looking through all this.
I'm trying to think, there's some wee things that I picked out that on deck 12, there is a zero G observation room.
There is?
Yeah.
Oh, was that the one that said null G? Is that what it was?
Or was it null G?
That's the same thing, right?
I assume so.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's a room you can just go in and float around in and have fun.
I didn't even realize that.
I think so. It's on the same deck as sickbay. Oh.
Huh.
Oh, no, it must be something to do because there's no reference to an actual sickbay, is there? It's just
there is. There's it says sickbay, main sickbay.
Oh, does it? I looked
and
for
I
it.
And I noticed that Troy's counseling office was on that deck as well. Sort of.
Yes,
all
that's right. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's actually divided into like 12 different rooms. There's not one that just says sickbay. It's like surgical suite, physical therapy, isolation rooms, ICU, like stuff.
And I'm figuring now that the null G observation is probably a medical room where you want to people to float around.
Like it's a kind of like therapy, maybe?
After or maybe like it for helping your bones so you don't have gravity. I don't know.
But well, actually, the less gravity on your bones, the worse it is because they start to degrade.
Well, I not for a long period of time, but just during some healing process.
Even for a short period.
Yeah. As soon as astronauts get into space, the microgravity, their brains realize they're in microgravity and decide, oh, I don't need a skeleton anymore. So you start to get rid of all the calcium in your body and you...
I don't know if your brain is really thinking that, but...
Oh, no, you're kind of... Well, yeah,
it doesn't you start to basically, it's like osteoporosis.
Yeah, and that's why they're more prone to kidney stones, because they're getting rid of all, flushing out all the calcium. I figure like possibly for burns victims, they're really bad. Now you want to kind of, you don't want them lying on a bed, because
that's an interesting thought. Yeah.
So zero G is probably to, I don't know. Kind of
or maybe there's species.
Well, and that's where you can, you know, do your zero G training like they needed in First Contact.
Oh, yeah. Where's like the zero G combat facility does that?
I saw the target practice.
Oh, yeah. The phaser target practice. Yes. I thought of, what was it, Guinan and Picard in there. Yeah.
So one thing I thought was a little insulting to Geordi, there is this whole VIP accommodations for your consulting engineer. I was like, oh man, there's this entire quarters for someone who's going to consult on the engineering. I thought, oh, poor Geordi.
That's for Scotty.
It's for Leia Brahms.
I was going to say Leia Brahms, definitely.
I was going to say that was like Scotty's little place. But
what kind of confused me was if you look at deck 26 to 29, which is where all the deuterium tanks are located. There's vast, vast quantities of liquid deuterium in storage, as the matter for the antimatter, matter-antimatter reactions. And then on deck 40, there's a little bit of antimatter storage. Why so much deuterium and so little antimatter when it's a one-to-one ratio?
That is a great question, unless they somehow can make antimatter on demand and they don't want to have a huge store of it, because if that gets loose, that could be bad. So I don't know, though. It's a good question.
Well, they needed that much deuterium because Starship Mine, they had to clear the deuterium.
Yeah, but I think, like, could it be, Joe, that, like, you need the deuterium for the matter and then you need the antimatter for the annihilation, for certain things, but maybe for, like, the thrusters or impulse, you would use the deuterium and fuse it? I don't know.
Yes.
Use fusion instead of antimatter.
There are the impulse fusion reactors. We'll use deuterium and fuse it into heavier things like tritium and helium. Good thoughts. We science the hell out of
there
that
go.
There, girl. Like it. Can we briefly mention what do we think future expansion will be used for?
More holodecks.
Really?
More quarters.
More holographic quarters.
More science. Quantum torpedo storage. No?
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. It was pretty interesting.
It was a big empty space that masks used to build that temple.
There we go.
You know, that was one of the things that I liked looking at the blueprints, was that you'd see a specific room and then it was like it would bring a specific episode to
yes.
mind. I thought that was so cool. Like when there was the room and I forgot to write it down. And I just totally remembered Kalar and Worf was their strategic mm-hmm. planning room or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, that's the one with Worf and Kalar. And so many of that happened.
Yeah, I had that happen too. Like the one episode where you see sensor maintenance in Lonely Among Us, where Geordi and Worf are there in the first season and something happens where like Worf gets taken over by some being or something. And they have like two places for sensor maintenance. I'm like, it was one of those places.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. And you mentioned the tactical planning suites. So there's quite a few tactical planning rooms around the place. I kind of like that. So Amy, you were going to ask me something. Yes.
Yes. So tell me your final thoughts about reading these blueprints. What did you think?
Well, I've read them before, remember. So they were, even though I only found them again today earlier, and it was nice just to go through them again because it kind of brought back lots of memories of when I got them, probably when I was around about 17, 18. And I was at kind of one of those peaks in my Star Trek love, and so it was nice. It was like a comfort blanket for me to go through them and remember all the little details that I used to pick out. So yeah, I like having them. That's my favorite book. That and the Star Trek The Next Generation technical manual are invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
You should get this as well, and we should possibly talk about this at some point in the future.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Justin?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I mean, I hadn't really gone through these before, didn't know what to expect. I think I was impressed that there were so many, like 13 poster size things, and that they chose to do it that way instead of maybe just having like, you know, standard pages in a book or something like that. So again, like you see all the dedication, you see all the details. They didn't put details on like absolutely everything because that would probably take a lot more work, and who knows, maybe they didn't have enough computing power to label every room or something. But I mean, there's just like tons of stuff, and it does kind of fire your imagination. And it does make you think, especially because this came out after Generations, like, you know, we're not going to see the Enterprise D again. Maybe we'll see a Galaxy class ship in the Picard series, but there's just something that's special about the Enterprise D. And I think it gets into what you're talking about, Joe, like maybe it's modular, maybe the different Galaxy class ships have different arrangements and this has a specific one and it has its own character. So I just loved looking at this and getting all the perspectives, and And I'm so glad that you brought this to us, Joe, because I probably wouldn't have taken a look at it, at least for a while. So,
well, yeah, and we purchased it just for this podcast, and it definitely is a treasure, something that I will look at more frequently. And now that I've learned how to read it, you know, it just, the reading, the little pamphlet that it came with is chock full of information that I absolutely loved. And you're right, just having this ship be another character on the Enterprise, you know, on Next Gen, just really brings it to life. And yeah, it sparks the imagination while being more detailed. And I think these blueprints are IDIC, as it says, and that stands for incredibly detailed and infinitely complicated. That was mentioned by Rick Sternbach. I also learned that the Enterprise D was only around for 9 short years, launching in 2363 and to its premature demise in 2372 in generations.
Although I think 2372 is a typo. I think it was 2371, if I'm not mistaken. But it wasn't around for long.
That's what it says
for sure.
Here in the... It does. It says that here.
I know. But,
okay, maybe a typo.
Yeah, it wasn't around for very long, was it?
No, it wasn't, which is so sad because the Enterprise D is definitely by far my favorite Enterprise. It is. I found it so intriguing to look through, and I definitely am glad to have the opportunity to get to know this character a little bit more. And again, very thankful to have the opportunity to do so.
Joe is showing his beautiful Enterprise D model. Yes. From Eagle Moms.
It's beautiful. I think, I don't know when you guys first met the Enterprise D, but I was kind of in my formative years, so it's kind of got a special place in my heart. I think the Enterprise E is kind of cooler. I think it's a bit meaner looking, but this is family. This is beautifully designed. And like, it would be really difficult to make because it's all just odd looking curves, isn't it?
So listeners, we're just going to pause here for a moment because I think Joe and the Enterprise D are having their own intimate moment.
Yes. Do you two need to be alone?
Yeah, he's caressing the saucer section. All right.
Okay, well, Enterprise is away.
All right. Well, let's preview next week. What we're going to do, Justin?
Well, Amy, I think you're starting a new series, aren't you?
We are, and I'm very excited to talk about it because, as you may or may not know, I co-host The Edge, which is about Star Trek Discovery, and how one of the comments that I've made is that it's so serialized and how I miss the episodic nature of Next Gen. However, I got to thinking, no, we've got serialized stories. And so we're going to start a series that's going to talk about the serialization in the Next Generation. So we're going to have part one for that. And I'm not going to say.
And you're going to decide.
Amy, is this part one of your serialization series?
Yes, it is.
That sounds awesome. I'll listen to that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Amy, is this, I think you said it's based on this collection that they put out a while ago. Is that the Star Trek Fan Collective one?
It is the Star Trek Fan Collective. So, listeners, some of you may already own those Fan Collector editions.
Okay, awesome. Well, looking forward to bringing that over.
Yes. Well, it's been so much fun going over TNG Blueprints, but it isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Yeah, this is the part where I put in my notes. Well, this is a nice after-school special.
Like, after-school special?
You know, it just sort of wraps
just
up everything.
Primitive culture. A look at history and culture through Star Trek.
You know, imagine if that had happened in the Next Generation in season 2, that suddenly you'd had, you know, an older Spock turn up and you'd had Scotty come through his Dyson sphere or whatever, and then old McCoy's rattling around and they take over and they're basically the front.
They come to hijack the Enterprise.
They come
again.
To hijack the Enterprise, yeah. And they and you know, Spock goes, yeah, Spock goes, we're going to recover a Captain Kirk from the Nexus or whatever, you know? And imagine that. Imagine if it becomes that. I mean, you'd be watching it thinking, what is going on?
Literary Treks.
If there's some really great artwork in these that I, you know, I don't think we give it enough praise for that.
I almost want to take that panel and remove all the lightning and the pizzazz and all that stuff out of there and just put them in a disco room and it would almost look like they're dancing.
Yeah, it's just a Star Trek dance party, like Kirk's practically dabbing.
Exactly, that's what I was just thinking.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Warp 5.
The first joke in the film that I thought was truly funny was the long-distance call that he was getting from Lon Chaney's character, and he's turning into the Wolfman on the phone, right? And the guy is like, why are you calling long distance just to have your dog bark at me on the phone? And I'm like, it's like, I think that's a great line. I think it's really funny because it's like, you can't see what's going on. Because long distance in that day and age would have been like freaking expensive, right?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it will come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Amy, where can people contact you when you're not studying the blueprints of the Enterprise D?
Well, as I mentioned previously, I co-host The Edge, which is about Star Trek Discovery, and that's right here on the network. I'm also on the Fandom Podcast Network hosting Discoville, which talks about the Orville and Discovery. I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, and you can find me there in the Babel Conference. So, Joe, where can people contact you when you're not traveling aboard the Hyatt Regency in space?
Well, you can normally find me on Facebook. I will be occasionally on the Babel Conference. You can get me on Twitter at JoeyJoe77UK, or you can email me at joepodcasts@gmail.com. Yeah. And Justin, where can people contact you when you're not looking for the nearest bathroom on your current starship?
This is one thing I didn't get to mention before. In the, I think the first set of blueprints, it shows on deck one on the bridge, there is a bathroom. It's labeled head, and it's kind of off to the side of the bridge. So there's a bathroom there. We don't see like communal bathrooms in TNG. We see them in quarters, but it does exist. So I was so happy about that. And when I'm not thinking about that and looking for the nearest bathroom on my current starship of the imagination, it's got to be in my mind for now. Maybe we'll get there soon. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So if you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/TrekFM. That's patreon.com/TrekFM to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/TrekFM. So Amy, sorry, Joe, before you jump in, should we do a bonus for this one?
We should, with our new host, Joe.
That's me.
Oh, would you like me to ask a question?
Oh, do you have one? Yes. I figured since you brought it up that you have
Well, one. I brought it up because we should have one. But
we should.
I was going to say, was there a favorite deck that you saw in the blueprints, Joe?
10.
Because it has 10 forward?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a social animal. I would be there all the time.
You would?
Yeah. This is true. Yeah. Nice. At STLV, he's always at the masquerade bar.
Yeah, pretty much. Hanging out with Amy Nelson.
What about you, Amy?
Wow, that is a great question.
I know what you should pick, but...
I didn't think about it in terms of that.
Come on, as it's got to be... It's got to be deck 8 that has Riker and Troy's quarters, right?
Well, yeah, that was a very beautiful deck, seeing that there. And you saw Picard and Beverly, that they all four were on the same deck. That was pretty cool. So mm-hmm. Sure, I'll take that. But like I said before, my favorite poster was poster screen 3, because it had the three ships.
The three ships, yeah. Well,
Justin, what about you?
I already talked about it, but it's got to be decks 13 and 14 with Cetacean Ops. Man, I want to see Cetacean Ops. Can we have something like that on the Picard show or any show in the future? Maybe, you know, Discovery encounters some starships in the 32nd century that are just sentient dolphins. Why not? I would love that. That is one of the things. You're right, Amy. We did see like the Zindi Aquatics, which I loved in Enterprise. But other than that, we pretty much haven't seen much like that. So we need to see more. Yeah.
Don't get caught with your fishing rod on deck 13, please, Justin.
Oh, no.
No, that's bad.
They would not like that.
Deck 10 definitely for me, because the holodecks are there. Holodecks, mm-hmm. 10 forward, then deck 12 for the gym. I would just do that.
I mean...
Yeah, there were four gymnasiums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, why ever go on duty? There's so much fun stuff to do.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Tribuzio, Joe Keegan, and Jim McMahon. Thank you for supporting Trek FM, and especially Earl Grey.
Well, join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
The producers would have crashed it anyway.
Captain, there'd be whales here.
Great joy and gratitude.
But nobody calls it gymnasium, Amy.
Well, they do on the blueprints.
Well, call it the gym.
Yeah.
Are you going to do gymnastics? You said it.
I could, because there's a gymnasium.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
Joe, we'd like to take this opportunity. Yes. Would you start, please?
Oh, were you waiting for me to start? I thought you were going to waffle on at a great rate about nothing again.
I just want to say before you go in there, Amy, I didn't even think about that. You're an associate producer and you just said your name. I've avoided saying my name is the associate producer this whole time.
I was just thinking that same thing. I was like, well, Justin said it.
I've specifically avoided
it
because it would sound weird to thank myself for it. But
I know I sound like
Joe
an idiot
set a precedent.
Talking about myself in the third person, but I didn't want to deviate from the script for fear of being given into trouble.
Very good, Joe.
You mean to say, Justin, that you've been reading this and leaving your name out?
No, I've been specifically structuring the outline so it's never me doing it.
Oh, my gosh. And I never caught on to that.
Oh, boy.
Well,
listeners getting a
no
super.
There's no way to avoid it now, because now we have two associate. Yeah. I get to co-host with two associate producers. That's fabulous.
That's awesome. Well, some super behind-the-scenes stuff there for listeners. Anyway, go ahead, Amy.